Thank you. As Pastor Bob said, I am the youth pastor here. And before I begin, I want to kind of just let you know our vision for the youth. Our vision for the youth is very simple. I like to kind of tone things down to simplicity as much as I can, because that's how I am and that's how I was made. Our first goal as a youth, as the youth team and as the youth leadership here, we want to bring the youth to have an encounter with God. That's number one and foremost. And that comes through, that comes through knowing who God is, knowing who they are, their identity, and also we are trying to help them discover their mountain. I find this very amazing that our church and our pastor has this, and we teach on the mountains because we teach the youth to try, we're desperately helping, trying to get them to discover their mountain, because they're, I remember in my life I spent years trying to figure out what I wanted to do, you know, college. And then I went to another college, and then I got married and all that stuff, which I'm going to share. And then, like, it, you know, God revealed it to me. So to me, if we can get the youth to discover their mountain at an early age, it will save them so much time and will have them be more effective into the kingdom. So also we want to develop a culture of in which God is in everything. We want to have the youth know that everything that they do, God is interested in and is part of, and he is in everything. So we want to develop a culture of prayer, a culture of worship, and a culture of hearing from God. That is reading your word, hearing a prophetic, and also, most importantly, teaching them to hear God in that still small voice. Not like here. You know, hearing a word is great, but there's something about hearing God for yourself. So when you come and you hear a word, it's confirmation for what God has already told you. And also, we want to bring arts and entertainment, because that's who I am. You'll find out more about that later. So we want to do a lot of activities, a lot of events that incorporate arts and incorporate all that stuff that comes with it. So before I start, I know it's graduation season, and I would love if all the graduates that are graduating now can please stand up, because we want to honor you. We want to honor you. Like, so please stand up if you're graduating or graduated. Yes, thank you. That is amazing. I know there's more in the youth group, but I think they have like graduation parties or something like that. So we forgive them. Graduation is amazing because not only is it a stepping stone of what you're accomplishing and you're going into something new, but it shows that you had the perseverance and the discipline and the tenacity to just keep going and stay with it and not quit. So that's why we do graduation. That's why there's that ceremony to honor you, to say good job for not quitting. So my passage that I'm going to read today, if you have your Bible, is in Luke 7, 11 through 15. And this ties into my life so awesome, because as I kept reading this passage and the story about what Jesus did for this mother, it brought it to my life so personally that it was just amazing. Something about me, I am a PK, which if you don't know what that is, I'm a preacher's kid. I've been a preacher's kid almost all my life. My dad was a preacher since he was in his 20s. He was a preacher in Romania. He built a church in Romania during the communist regime without authorization. I know, it is craziness. The stories that he would say, like, it's a big thing if you guys don't, some of you have no clue what the communist regime and all that jazz is, but you couldn't do that. The government wouldn't let you. The government could arrest you and you would go somewhere and not come back. It was very simple. The government had the authority to take you and put you in a work camp or sent you off to work somewhere and you would never come back. There was secret service all around all the time and everybody ratted on everybody else because there was this sense of fear. So my dad built this church in the middle of his town with the help of his father-in-law and some other pastors. And after it was built, the Secret Service or government had him come in and they were like, well, we know that you're doing this stuff, but we can't prove it. All right? We know that you're smuggling Bibles in. We know that Americans are bringing money in, but we can't prove what you're doing. So we're going to give you two options. You and your family could leave, or you and your family will have an accident. It's very simple. So my dad was like, well, we're going to leave. So we got everybody got our visas, miraculously, and we left. We came here to America. So my dad became a pastor in Chicago, one of the biggest Romanian churches in Chicago. And as I was growing up, I love parents that look at their children and like, he really likes to do this. So we're going to encourage him to, or encourage her to keep doing what they like to do. I encourage parents, please look out for your children, what they like to do, because there's a reason they like to do that. That might be their calling. So my dad in his wisdom said, all right, this kid at home, being the middle child, loves to take my camera and make home videos, have puppet shows, and kind of like just entertain all the guests that come over. So to kind of help me serve and do something in church, he talked to one of the teachers and was like, hey, can you make a drama team and just kind of help him be creative and kind of an outlet for him? And that's what happened. We had the first drama team in the Romanian community in the U.S., which was crazy because you couldn't do that in our community. It wasn't allowed. So I started doing that. And I loved it. I loved it so much that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do that. To be an actor and be a producer and director and all that stuff. Make movies and blah, all that stuff. But the problem was I couldn't. Because Christians don't go to Hollywood. Because Hollywood's evil. You know? So that's what I was capped. And I was told you couldn't do this. And I believed that. Because in our churches, in our community, fear was preached a lot. You know, God is watching all of you. He knows what you're doing late at night by yourself. You know, so after I grew up a little bit, and after high school, I was like, all right, well, I want to go to college because education was very important in my family. And we were raised to education. So I didn't really know what to do because I was like, all right, what do I do now? You know, like, God, what do you want me to do? I started doing computers for a couple years, but I was like, this is boring. I can't sit in front of a screen all day. Do I really want to do this? You know, and so I started asking myself these hard questions. And to me, I boiled it down like to nothing. And I was like, okay, who is number one? What is the most important thing in life? I said, God. Okay, God is the most important thing in life. So if God is the most important thing in life, then maybe I should go learn about him. for me, that was just simple. That's what I said. I'm like, okay, well, let's find a school. I found a great Christian school in Tennessee, and I went to that, and I left home, which is crazy. I left home, you know? I was the rebel that left. So I left this Christian university, and it opened my eyes because I realized I was living in this bubble, this church bubble. I was at church like five days out of the week. I lived at church. All my friends were at church. That was my life, was church, doing church stuff. And then I got out of the bubble, and I realized, holy cow, there's other people that don't look like me and don't talk Romanian, and they have tattoos. You know, it's crazy. And they dress weird, and they have beards and stuff, and they do worship. How in the world? You know, and God was awesome enough to put them in my room and circle of friends. So I was like friends with all these weird looking people that I would never hang out with because they were not Romanian and they definitely didn't go to my church. So I would not talk to them. And I got to know who they were and discover that, wait a moment, God can work through them? This is craziness. So my bubble was up, broken. In that time that God started breaking my bubble and started breaking stuff off of me, my heart got broken. And that's when I got angry and all pissed off at God because, of course, it's God's fault, you know, not my fault. So my heart got broken and I started rebelling. Started rebelling with, you know, alcohol and drugs. Moved over here to Arizona and I didn't like it. Because I wanted to go back home to Chicago, and I didn't like it. It was hot, you know? Like, nothing was here. There's no buildings. There's no grass. And I felt like a prisoner at home, and I couldn't handle it. I didn't know what to do. So I just started rebelling against everything. And that's when God had the mercy on my life to bring Renee into my life. So I got smitten with her, and she started praying for me. I said, God, help this boy. Help him. I know he's the one, but help this man. So she started praying for me. And there was a point in my life where I had to choose between drugs and friends and stuff and her, because I couldn't have both. Because the drugs would just take me out into a spiral that would be ridiculous. And it got hard. So I chose Renee. Thank you, Lord. And I got married. Kids, job, you know. And then automatically, youth ministry. Because, you know, I went to Christian university, Christian college. I'm a pastoral major. My dad's like, youth leader, boom. All right, youth leader. Did that for 7 years. My dad started another church. And then out of necessity, me and Renee had to be the children's pastors, Sunday school teachers, the children's room attendant, youth leaders, speaking in church a couple times on Sunday. And it just got like all this stuff. We were just doing all this stuff. And I got burnt to a point where like I was like, church, hey, Sunday, I hated it, you know, because all I did was just like serve, yeah, watch a kid, cool, yeah, babysitting club, you know, that's what we were doing, you know, it was just a big babysitting club, and I was teaching toddlers, you know, and doing lessons and stuff, and be like, no, no, put that out of your mouth. No. All right, we're going to learn about Jesus. Stop it. No, don't do that. It was like that every Sunday. I know. But I handled it well. I got burnt. That's what happened. I got burnt, And there was, I remember there was a night where me and Renee were walking out. We were walking around. We had a date night, just us two. And we started talking. We're like, we can't keep doing this. We can't keep doing this. It's something's going to break and it's going to deteriorate. We can't keep doing this. We need. What do you want to do? And I was like, we got to leave. We got to go to a church where we could just sit and get fed. So we left. Took us like a year to slowly back away and put everything in order and leave. And then we came to CFTN, which was hilarious because CFTN was like a block away from my dad's church on 19th Avenue. And I drive by it all the time. And I'm like, we need to go over there. What's hope happening over there? I remember going there once or twice. I'm like, this is awesome. And then I get the call. Why weren't you at church tonight? You know, I get that call. So we started going to CFTN, and I remember, like, we're going to sit in the back, and I just want to get fed. And it was amazing. The worship, the word, like, I would just come here and just be like, just gorge on the buffet that we have at CFTN, you know? And I remember every Sunday driving home, like, I'm so glad we left. Yeah, I know, it's amazing. High-fiving each other. You know? But the problem was, something was missing out of my life. Even though I had a great church, and I came, get fed, work, kids, something was still missing. And this is where I want to go into to this passage. Verse 11, Luke chapter 7, says, Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain. And his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, "Don't cry." Then he went up and touched the coffin, and those carrying it stood still. He said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. So in this story, we see, first of all, Jesus is entering this town, and he's got a group of people following him. And on the other end, we see this mother and another group of people carrying this coffin. And the thing that strikes me is the mother. The mother is a widow, we find out, and she loses her son. This is probably the worst thing that can happen to this mom or this woman right now. Because in that day, you know, there's no women's rights, there's no, like, all that. All this stuff. There isn't. A woman was nothing without her husband. The husband controlled everything. He made money. He was everything. What's awesome is the woman also had a son. So the husband died, and at least the woman had something to fall back on. She had hope that he was going to take care of her. He was going to provide for her. He was going to be the man of the house now. And then he dies. So this woman literally has lost everything. She lost all her hope for her future. All, any kind of hope that she's going to make something in society. She is probably the lowest of the low in society right now. All her hopes, all her dreams, all her future, she's walking next to right now. She's walking out of the city, and all of her future is in this coffin, and it's dead. And then Jesus shows up. Jesus shows up, and then I love it because the first thing he does is he sees this woman. He sees this woman, and I love it because Jesus is a picture of Jesus. He sees you. Not like the way that like some of us were taught that Jesus sees you. Not like that. You know what I'm saying? It's like this big eyeball is just like looking at you. You know? And he sees you. Not that way. He sees her. He sees her for who she is. He sees her for her pain and what she's going through. He sees what's happening. No judgment, no condemnation. He just sees her. And then it says that saw her and his heart went out to her. His heart went out to her. He has compassion for her. It's amazing that Jesus cares about what you're going through. Not just, he knows what you're going through because obviously he's Jesus and he knows everything and he's all big and everything. No, he cares personally about what you're going through. He sees you and he sees what you're going through inside. And then he walks up to this woman and he says, "Don't cry." First of all, I would have been pissed off. Because obviously I'm going to cry. I just buried my son here. I just buried someone who I loved. And now you're going to tell me not to cry. But that for me, that's not the way Jesus was saying it. Like, don't cry. It's okay. It's going to be fine. And he's on his way. You know, pat on the shoulder. Oh, poor baby. It's okay. It's not like that. Because what I love about Jesus is that every word that Jesus says comes with a promise. It comes with a promise that's implied. He doesn't have to say it. He says, don't cry. He knows what's going to happen, right? Jesus has already solved the problem. He already knows what's going to happen. So he tells this woman not to cry, knowing what he's going to do. But she doesn't know that. And I love that every word that comes out of Jesus' mouth has an implied promise that just like holds that word. Because all he has to say is, don't cry. I got it under control. You don't even know what I'm going to do. You haven't even thought about what I'm going to do. But don't cry because I'm going to do something. Don't cry. And then he went and he put his hand on the coffin. What I love about this is that Jesus not only sees you, he has compassion over you. He speaks a promise to you. But then he will come and put his hand on your problem. He makes it personal. Your problem is personal to Jesus. Because when my kid has a problem, that's personal to me. So when Jesus sees our problem and sees what we're going through, he has compassion on us and he comes and he puts his hand on our problem. And then it says, those who carried it stood still. For me, it's those guys stood still, and then Jesus has a word and says, young man, get up. I say to you, get up. It's funny because in my mind, it goes super off weird, and I can see these four guys carrying this coffin, and they're like tough. You know, to me, they're like kind of like mobster guys with some suits carrying the coffin, you know? Jesus comes in, sees the woman, tells her not to cry. I can't even imagine these guys. Like, hey, look at this guy coming over here telling this lady that not to cry. How dare he? You know? And then he comes and he touches the coffin. And he says for the young man, get up. Who in the world does this guy think he is? You know? First of all, he comes here, breaks this up, walks in like he's who knows who, and he touches the coffin like, you can't. But then I could imagine, like, you know, them all like, how dare he? And then, it's, you know, something moves in the coffin. I'm like, hey, did you feel that? Hey, Vinny, you feel that, bro? You know? And like moves, and then son gets up. Son gets up and begins to talk. And then, it's not like Jesus just steps away. All right, I did my piece. Mic drop, and he's out. You know? Jesus takes the boy, the son, and he gives him back to his mother. It's something so profound here because it's the same thing that happened to me. So I'm sitting in church. Pastor's talking and and announcements come and like, we have this great class called Rewind. And blah, 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 and stuff. And then I get the elbow. I'm like, yeah, I know what the elbow means. You know? So I'm like, all right, whatever. Take a class. You know? So I go to Rewind a couple years ago and it's like 8 weeks long. You know? Yeah, it was still 8 weeks long. So I go to Rewind. And after Rewind, I realized that Jesus saw my problem. Jesus saw that I was carrying a coffin around inside. And it wasn't that I had some hurt or some pain. I had this dead dream inside, and I carried it with me, and I just kind of just agreed, said, all right, you know what? I'm too old. I got kids now. I gotta provide for them. That would just leave it down there. It was fun while I was little. All right, I gotta, you know, be an adult. And God came in, and He put His hand on my problem, and He spoke to my coffin, and He resurrected it. He brought it to life, and then He gave it back to me. Some of you here have been walking around with dead dreams. Some of you probably don't even know anymore because it's so dead that it's like bones. It's like beyond dead, you know? But they're still there. And some of you have just let it go and you've accepted the fact that this is how life should be. And I gotta wake up every morning at 4 a.m. and I drink my coffee and I brush my teeth and I get dressed and I go to work and then I come home and I play with the kids and then we eat and then I spend time, either watch a show or something, and I talk to my wife and then we go to sleep. And we do that again. And we've accepted the fact that that's what life is and that's how it is. Okay, that is it and it's over. And we walk around and we're holding a dead coffin. Walking around. And it's fine. We've accepted it. It's dead. The dream is over. It was fine as a little kid. Or I always wanted to be something, but I realized that, you know, I got to be an adult and I can't do that. And we're walking around with coffins, walking around with bones inside. And just like the mother, Jesus sees you. And you might not even know it. You might be like, eh, I'm good, I'm comfortable. I always tell my wife, I don't ever want to be comfortable because the moment I'm comfortable, I'm dead. Some of you just got comfortable in where you're at. And you just let it go. You just it is what it is. You've accepted it. Maybe you just come here and you just serve and that's it. And you go do life, but this is it. But what I've realized is that it's not in this bubble. Serving is not in this bubble. Serving has to be outside of this bubble. And some of you have amazing dreams. Some of you had amazing dreams. Some of you would sit all night and dream when you were little about what you're going to do, and you're going to do this awesome stuff. And you're going to be this person you imagined. There was a reason you did that. There's a reason you dreamt that. So I'm here because I feel like what resurrection happened in my life, it could happen in your life. There's a dream inside of you, and I know most of you already know what it is. Some of you don't even know, and it's done. But God is going to resurrect it. You're going to start redreaming again. Something's going to come back and be like, man, I haven't thought about this since I was a teenager. Or I haven't thought about this since I was 10. Why am I thinking about this? It's because God has came and saw you. He put his hand on you. And he said, get up. And he's going to give it back to you. So, that's my short word. And I want to do prayer. So, do we have prayer? Like the altar team? First and foremost, I want all the graduates who are here to get prayer first. Because they are embarking in something new. They are stepping into something new that's happening in their life. And we want to bless them. So if the prayer team can come up, all the graduates first, please come up. Because I want to honor you about your for your sacrifice and for the hard work that you did, and we want to pray for you. And then, I want to open the altar up because I feel like there's people here that have given up and are carrying coffins with you. These are past dreams, past desires. And God's here to tell you that he can resurrect you and will resurrect it and give it back to you. God sees it. So if you all can stand up, please. Maybe some of you are here and there's something missing. You're saying to yourself, there has to be more to life than this. I'll repeat that. I would repeat that to myself all the time. There has to be more to life than this, than what I'm doing. And I'm here to tell you there is. There's way more. There's mountains that you are made to conquer. There's mountains that you are made to climb up and take a hold of. There's dreams inside of some of you.
I want more. quiet down in my soul that I can't contain, that I can't control. I want more of you, God. I want more of you, God. Set a fire down in my soul that I can't contain, that I can't control. I want more of you.